HPPodcraft.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the HP Lovecraft Literary Podcast comment show for January.
This is a show about comments and comments on comments and the commenters who love comments. And it's happening exclusively on Patreon. Comments!
Where did we last leave off?
Well, obviously, since it was December, we were talking about Christmas stuff. You know, we were talking about the history and the weird characters. We learned that many monsters will come discipline people for leaving their decorations out past the holiday. You know, we don't want to enrage any Icelandic goblins or anything by talking about Christmas too much here in the new year. So despite lots of cool information that we got on those shows, we're going to keep this section pretty brief.
Now let's start with the kit bag by Algernon Blackwood.
Yeah, I screwed up on that one. I said that Algernon Blackwood was knighted. Mm-hmm. Even in the next episode after that, since we recorded some of those early to get through the holidays, I called him Sir Algernon Blackwood, but I was wrongity wrong. I got this comment via Witch House Media, actually, from listener Ernie Pine, who wrote, "I hate to be that guy who points out small mistakes, but Algernon Blackwood was never knighted." Yeah. And he wrote a second comment that said CBE is probably where the confusion is. He was a commander of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, but that would not make him Sir Algy.
Oh, okay.
Nuances I didn't understand. Thank you, Ernie Pine. But no worries. We're all that guy at some point pointing things out. I don't know all the ins and outs of British honors, but I don't feel too bad about getting that wrong because, I mean, I don't think I should. I do feel bad, but I don't. I shouldn't feel that bad because I was just repeating something that's not only on the internet, but it's also on book jackets for major publishers.
Yeah.
You know, I found that in lots of different places. So I don't know who planted the misinformation about him getting knighted initially, but it is everywhere, this knighthood thing. Anyway, the important thing is that Algernon Blackwood is just a normal jerk like the rest of us.
He sure is.
None of this knighthood stuff.
So Pierce Duncan wrote in to agree with you. He says, "When you think about it, every one of us is a haunted leather bag."
There you go. So true.
For our Christmas bonus episode, Steve wanted to know, what happened to the cow and the cake? It's a Christmas mystery. Mm-hmm. Yes, our guest Paula Dempsey set that up and then we forgot to follow through. So it's up to you.
Whatever you want the cow and the cake to be, it's on you. I thought this was cool. We were talking about all sorts of Christmas hounds in that bonus episode.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. And Caleb Shoggoth Lord Long wrote in about hounds of Welsh legend, the Cúan Anuin, or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Ethereal hounds who hunt the unjust.
Oh.
Legend has it their howls defy nature. The farther away a Cúan Anuin is, the closer his howl is, and the nearer he is, the farther away he sounds.
Oh.
I love that. That's really cool.
That is really cool. Blake Coleman wrote to refute some of our ideas that Christianity was just rebranding of pagan traditions. He writes, "I just wanted to provide some clarification on the Christianity Mithraism topic, as I'm an archaeologist and I've studied Mithraea quite a bit. First, we actually know very little about Mithraism since it was a mystery cult, and that by design does not make for a ton of explicit evidence. Yeah. In actuality, the only reason we assume it was likely a military cult is because the Mithraea have primarily been found in locations with high military populations, but those also happen to generally coincide with more highly urbanized areas. The comparisons and similarities between Mithraism and Christianity is generally considered to be significantly overblown by myth historians and archaeologists these days, and by and large is now widely considered that if there were aspects being borrowed from one to another, it's more likely that it was Mithraism borrowing from Christianity as opposed to the other way around. The whole idea was really popularized by Ernest Renan in the late 19th century, who was also pretty well known for his anti-Semitic views and revisionist works on Christian history. So take that for what you will."
He also had a note about Christ's birthday being placed on December 25th that was interesting. You know, we were saying that was just kind of, there were pagan traditions. There were things that happened on the 25th of December, and that's why they made it Christ's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Yes, the Feast of Sol Invictus was on December 25th and coincided with the winter solstice. Now, the reason for the date of Christmas is pretty convoluted, so stay with me. In early Christian/late antique thought, the creation of the man happened on the spring equinox. And in those days, significant days were cyclical. So it would therefore mean that the creation of the new man, i.e. Christ, would also occur on the spring equinox, which was thought to be March 25th at the time.
All right.
That's why March 25th is Annunciation Day, or the day the angel Gabriel told Mary that she would bear the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
And what's precisely 9 months after March 25th? December 25th. Hence the reason for the date of Christmas. The fact that it also coincided with the Feast of the Unconquered Son was acknowledged in early church calendars, but there was no intention of co-opting. The same goes with Saturnalia. As Chad stated, it was really wild in late antiquity, and the church actually took great offense at any comparison between the two." I think it all grows from multiple sources, so it's important to consider the things that he's saying, that Blake's saying here as well.
Yeah, sure.
But some of these things, I don't accept as fact that anything happened on May 25th from any angel to anybody. You know what I mean? Sure. So, like, that stuff, to me, I'm like, okay. Yeah. That's what the story is. Fine.
One last comment from Blake. The idea that shepherds would not be out in December is actually inaccurate, since the fields utilized were for the temple flock at the time, and those were kept grazing all year. Just as something extra, if you happen to spend Christmas in Bethlehem, even these days, you may as well see shepherds and their flocks abiding in the fields on Christmas Eve, and not because they want to maintain tradition. Okay, sorry for all the posts. I just really love the origins and beliefs and traditions, Christmas especially.
Yeah, I think that's all really good info, and that is some good schooling on the shepherds being out during the winter.
Yeah, I guess that's wrong.
Yeah, we made an assumption there. Our friend Jeff C. Carter wrote, awesome episode. He's talking about that bonus episode on Christmas.
Oh, right.
A few tidbits I have uncovered that weren't on the show. Newt Pookie was a goat demon that also trashes your house if you haven't taken down your decorations.
Oh, right.
That's who might come after us if we talk too much about this stuff.
Okay.
Frau Perkta, the witch that slits open the bellies of naughty children and fills them with pebbles and straw.
Wow.
Belschnickel, the cross-dressing Christmas hobo. Actually made famous on an episode of The Office. Olent Zero, who slices the throats of children that won't go to sleep on Christmas Eve.
Oh my God.
Le Père Foutard, the whip-wielding child killer. Hans Trapp, the Satan-worshipping, child-eating scarecrow. My God.
Wait, are these real or is he just making stuff up?
I don't know. And T.O. de Nadal, the treat-pooping Christmas log. Do yourself a favor and look up some of the lyrics to the songs children sing while they beat it with a stick.
That I know about. So yeah, I think Jeff is not kidding that these are actual real things.
Well, maybe. I think you'll start searching and then it'll all go back to websites that he owns that'll have the information on him. In fact, he's probably the person that started that dangerous rumor about Algernon Blackwood's knighthood. It probably comes from Jeff.
Jeff C. Carter, you son of a... Christine McCann says, I've been enjoying the Yule Lads posts on Facebook. I get a kick out of seeing Gryla and her lads in the Christmas episode of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Oh, right. You mentioned that there was a Christmas episode and the Yule Lads were in there.
It's a fun show. I've actually been enjoying it. And they love the devil on that show.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh,
it's amazing. Of course they do. They talk about Satan all the time. I think, man, if that had been on in the 80s. It would have been some satanic panic. But thanks, Christine, for pointing that out. Richard Horseman writes, to get a little soppy since it's that time of year for such things, I've been going back through the old episodes and just passed through the Case of Charles Dexter Ward ones. A few into this run of five, Chad mentions how important the show is to him. I hope that's still true because the feeling is very mutual. Aww. 2018 has been a heavy, heavy year for me, but y'all in my ears every week have been a great comfort. I absolutely still feel that way, Richard. It's very important to me. My love for the show and our audience only gets richer with the years. Also getting richer off of suckers like Richard. Sorry, I didn't mean that. That's not true. That's my that's my toxic masculinity. Trying to cut off any real emotion. No, it's true. The show is really important, man. It keeps me going every day.
It's super important to who I am and my identity. I look forward to working on it every week.
Yep.
We got to move on now, but a couple of comments from other Christmas episodes. Blue Nova writes, hey guys, I just saw Aquaman tonight, and at the start, Aquaman's dad owns a copy of the Dunwich Horror.
Yeah, I heard about that Dunwich Horror reference. I haven't seen the movie, but I have to admit, I immediately wondered, well, if they're going to make a Lovecraft reference in Aquaman, shouldn't it be Shadow Over Innsmouth or Call of Cthulhu?
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Maybe the reference is in Dunwich Horror that Wilbur Whatley is part god, part human, and Aquaman is part Atlantean, part human. So maybe that's what that's about?
Dude, I mean, I think that's trying... I mean, that's like...
Yeah, I know.
I could be wrong, but I just... Look, I don't want this take to be too hot, but these DC movies, they don't seem to pay too much attention to detail.
Ooh, damn.
Putting them together. I know. Nobody else has said this.
Wow.
I am not kidding, though. There were a couple of days I considered going to see that movie because it looks like it's got some fun CGI in it. And,
sure.
You know, the performances seem neat. But man, when I saw the trailer, Amber Heard's wig is the worst thing I've... Like, how do they have so much budget for the underwater effects and then they got her wig? Looks like they got it from a party store at the last minute. That wig is the equivalent of a teenage theater student in his first old age makeup. That's how bad it looks.
Yeah, why did they not just make her a natural redhead?
I have no idea.
It's so bizarre. Anyway, speaking of superheroes, on one of these episodes, we were talking about some of the characters that Andrew Lehman had created, including the Englishman, who could throw a key with such accuracy and force that he could unlock a door. Mm-hmm. And I wondered why he was called the Englishman. So Stephen wrote in, he says, I was thinking about the Englishman. I believe Andrew was referring to a billiards term. When a cue ball is struck on either side of its vertical axes, giving it side spin, that's called English in billiards. Mm-hmm. And I
put a little English on it.
There you go. And on Twitter, Clint Page also wrote regarding the Englishman, "Seems evident to me that the name comes from his ability to make a thrown object twist in the air to put English on a projectile, so to speak."
And Andrew actually replied to that tweet with one word: correct.
Love Andrew Lieben.
So yeah, that's what it is. You put a little English on something to give it that spin. I've been schooled by people who know how to do that when I'm playing pool, for sure.
Oh, man.
I do not know how to do that.
I'm very ashamed of myself because I live in England. I have lived here for coming on 9 years, and I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, but that's because you live in England. Does anybody say that in England, to put a little English on it? That seems like something you'd say outside of the country, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
Like, if you live in Holland, you're not going to go, "That guy's got Dutch courage. He just has courage, or he's just drunk." Right? Speaking of Andrew, he was a wonderful reader on the Nightwire. Let's get away from his Christmas stuff. He kicked ass on the Nightwire, and there were lots of comments on that show.
There was this one from Mark V. Pelham. "Always good to hear the creator of Superclutz, Electrolad, and Englishman read on a podcast. Like the Englishman, Lehman has the power to open the door to my imagination with expert accuracy."
Yes.
Aaron Duttel writes, "I'm so glad you guys covered this story. Like many people, it's my favorite weird tale. I always wondered if John Carpenter read this tale when he was writing The Fog. The first half of the movie is very reminiscent of this story in mood and style. The DJ in the movie is basically the reporter from The Nightwire."
Yes, the DJ played by Adrian Barbeau.
Oh, Adrian Barbeau.
Who also played reporters and nurses and damsels in distress in many films I made in my head around that time.
Yes.
Lots of starring roles and certain things I was cooking up. Whew. Hey, you know what I just realized, and maybe I shouldn't blow this on the comments show, but you can't spell gentleman without Lehman. You know what? Keep it in here, but I'm going to use that one again at a future time. It's too good. Raul Kuntz writes, "This story contains many tropes, implicit references, and call forwards to modern media, as well as a hyper-mysterious author. I'd almost be tempted to label this one of the Lackey Pfeiffer hoaxes, much like the one with the animatronic animals. Given how my mind usually works, it's probably an actual story, which would make it even more creepy."
Yeah.
"If it's an actual hoax, great job. It sounds really creepy with its mixture of HPL's Atmosphere, King's The Mist, Carpenter's The Fog, and Melville's Bartleby the Scrivener. Looking forward to learn the truth." And then there was an edit to the comment that said, "Seems to be real. Wow, that's so meta creepy." True. And, you know, I thought it was funny that he used hoaxes plural. We only did the one April Fool's showbiz pizza place story. Maybe he's talking about that Algernon Blackwood hoax that he was knighted. I mean, maybe that's caused more trouble than I knew.
Wait, that's not a hoax. That's just us being stupid.
I just have a feeling maybe I'm never going to live that one down. Like, all this work I've done in my life, and it's just going to be, he got it wrong about Blackwood. Well, kind of like Bill Cosby.
My God, what?
Well, yeah, he made that great television show, but all people remember about him are those Pudding Pops commercials. You know?
Right. So Marcus Lauer writes, "Not quite the same, but I used to work the night shift at a sleep clinic, which this story's setting reminded me of a bit. There is something inherently creepy in watching 10 people sleep over a monitor. I always imagined one of them suddenly sitting straight up in bed and walking towards my office. Glad that's over."
It's got to be creepy, yeah. Ooh. Jeff C. Carter responded to that and wrote, "Did you count how many spiders an average person eats in their sleep?" Mm-hmm. This is a good question, you know. Somebody's got to count that, and I imagine it's a sleep clinic where they come up with those statistics.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, Jeff's kind of fighting his way onto this show, I got to say. I don't want to give him the attention at all,
yeah.
But he just keeps writing funny stuff.
He's kind of a jerk, but man, his material's great. Daniel Wiley writes, "So glad you guys covered this story. Is anyone else detecting a whiff of the music of Eric Zahn in the story? John Morgan's demise, typing away hours after he gave up the ghost, reminded me distinctly of how Eric Zahn continued to play on mechanically when I first read it. It definitely has echoes of H.P. Lovecraft's first true Lovecraft story, and I can easily see why H.P. himself regarded it well. Great coverage, gentlemen." Running Head writes, "Great story. Reminded me of one of Chris's suggested interpretations of the music of Eric Zahn, that the whole place might have been pinched out of all existence and deleted from human memory by some great Lovecraftian entity. I think some people really might be able to write in both Greek and Latin simultaneously. Despite what my wife says, I really can walk and chew gum at the same time." Aww.
Not quite the same thing. There are a lot of comments about this idea of writing in two languages.
Uh-huh.
Mark McCartney wrote, "The writing simultaneously in Latin Greek is a story told about Thomas Jefferson."
Oh.
And then Ethan Cordry followed up, James Garfield was reputed to be able to do so as well. So for some reason, this myth gets applied to American presidents, I guess.
Right.
I have a feeling nobody's going to say that about Trump. Now, not making political comments here. I just, based on his character, I just don't think that's going to be.
Probably not.
I mean, I've seen him drink a little cup of water with both hands. So maybe that'll evolve into a legend. Okay, I won't go there. Ethan continues, I suspect it's not actually that hard to learn as a parlor trick. Just pick a particular thing to write long beforehand and practice the hand movements until you can do so by muscle memory.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe that doesn't sound hard to you, but you wouldn't even necessarily have to even learn to speak or read the two languages. True. Just copy the letter forms without looking, which could be very doable, especially if you're ambidextrous. Oof. I think it'd be really doable if you were a genius as well. You know, but it still sounds hard to me.
It sure sounds really hard. Christopher Williams writes, so one of my nerdy hobbies is amateur radio. We still hold big contests using Morse code where you try and contact as many people as possible and exchange some required information. One of the categories is called SO2R, which means single operator two radios.
Well, I've heard of that video. I tried to watch it at the library, but I guess they block content like that. You know, you ever hang out in libraries and use the internet?
No, I don't.
It's a pretty cool scene, man. It's like the new singles bar. Talk about single operators.
Oh, boy. Christopher continues. A couple times a year, I travel to a contest with some guys that run two radios instead of typewriters and have the left radio in the left ear of the headphones and the right radio in the right. It's totally reminded me of them. How they can copy two Morse code streams at once, I'll never know, but it's pretty cool.
That, to me, is believable.
Yeah.
And he actually knows these people that can do it. And then some other folks wrote in, this guy, Alan Trahan or Tran, wrote, I honestly didn't realize until this time through that the Nightwire guys are transcribing Morse code, not speech. He mentions typing with one finger, then the material coming out one letter at a time. So a guy transcribing two streams at once is still impressive, but somewhat less insane with that in mind.
Were they still using Morse code by that point?
Yeah, probably, because it's probably coming over the telegraph, which you use Morse code for. So it's one letter at a time. So he was just doing it. I mean, it's still a crazy thing to be able to do.
Sanjay Matthew writes, chance pronunciation of squirrel fascinates me. Squirrel? His accent is usually very neutral Midwestern, but that squirrel invoked a grizzled Appalachian backwoodsman. Wow.
Yeah.
In the theosophist tradition of weird fiction, I can only assume he's channeling race memory.
Is it weird the way I say that? Squirrel. Squirrel.
Squirrel?
That's not odd, is it?
We're from the same area, so we grew up together, and we say squirrel the same way. Squirrel? Squirrel?
Squirrel.
Squirrel.
I don't think I said squirrel.
You didn't say squirrel. You said squirrel.
No. And by the way, I'm of German and Swedish heritage, so if I were channeling race memory, I'd say squirrel.
James, I'm sorry, German and Swedish listeners. James Anthony writes, wanted to throw a suggested author out there, Greg Stolze. In particular, Switch Flipped, or maybe 7 and 7. One of the weird stories at any rate. My understanding is you usually go with dead authors because their work is frequently available for free, but Stolze has a free fiction library on his site. Just a thought. Funny that you mentioned Greg Stolte because he is an old, old friend of mine and I used to game with him in the Quad Cities. He's from where we're from.
Yeah, that's why I threw that comment in there because I was like, well, we know this guy.
Yeah, and I've been backing and reading Greg's stuff for years. I think he's a great author. Unfortunately, he is alive.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just because of the freeness of the work, although that plays into it. The decision's for a myriad of reasons. But it's because we're not really a review show, so we don't want to be getting into people's current work is primarily what it is. We just want to look into the past and see what gems are there. That's mostly why we do it.
I don't want to criticize people's work who are alive.
Me neither. And part of that is just I'm not a critic, and I don't think my opinion matters on this stuff.
No.
And I'm really impressed when somebody actually sits down and makes a film or writes a story or does a song or anything.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to say I don't like it and then have someone not listen to it. It's very hard to do art, so my opinion about it doesn't matter. But it's fun to go back and mine these things, and obviously we make fun of them and stuff. And obviously I hate August Derleth, if that hasn't been very abundantly clear lately. I'm just going to throw that in there. But also it helps that those things are in general public.
Yeah, but Greg's a great writer, and he does great stuff, and he's a super nice guy and a good friend. So
yeah, really cool to hear you say that. And folks, those are good recommendations, so go check out Greg's work. GregStolze.com, that's STOLZE. Patrick Reinhardt writes, sounds like some of that info about H.F. Arnold is coming from here. And then he lists a link to findagrave.com.
Oh, right. Yeah.
No mention of him being a writer or creative person of any kind, though. I went and read the entry. It talks about how he was a Galesburg native. So that's where he was from in Illinois.
Oh.
He went to Knox College, which
Right, yeah.
I've been there. I actually almost went there. And then he spent his adult years here around Hollywood in Los Angeles, in Laguna Beach. So it also links out to family members, children. I think they've all passed away. But then that links out to surviving grandchildren, some of whom are still alive. And I really kind of wanted to go down the rabbit hole on that since there's so little bio available for H.F. Arnold. And this story is so amazing.
Yeah.
It's maybe one of the best weird tales I've ever read. So
yeah,
the problem is I don't know if I'd ever be able to find time for that. And I don't have a background in doing that kind of research, so I wouldn't want to, you know, reach out and tick somebody off or anything.
Right.
But I think there might be folks that do listen to the show who are researchers of this type. So if you have an interest in doing this, contact us and maybe we can work something out. But I'd like somebody to get a little more information about H.F. Arnold.
Yeah.
And his family members might know quite a bit about this stuff.
Well, strangely, they might not even know about it at all.
Yeah, there's that too. I mean, you should make them aware, like, your grandpa kicked ass. He wrote like a great story.
Well, Tara Murphy wrote, he was not saying the room was close, like close the door. He was saying, but close, like you are standing too close. Oh, close. Not close.
Yeah, close. No, you were saying close.
I was saying close, not close.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, by the way, I mean, I knew that that's what it meant, that it was close. I've actually used that phrase before, but I didn't hear you say it the wrong way. And then when I was doing the edit, I picked up on it.
Oh.
Which made me wonder, do I even listen to you? Not because I don't want to, but maybe some other force is controlling my body while we record.
Oh, yeah, and, probably.
Know, could be something like
that. That's it.
Andrew Turnicek wrote, FYI, they may speak Greek in Greece, but it's not classical Greek of the ancient Greeks. So Chad is right. People would not be able to read his Greek transcripts.
Mm.
See, that's why I don't share them with anybody.
Right.
I told you.
Yeah.
Now, thank you for that, Andrew. After all that Sir Blackwood stuff, I needed a win.
He really did. Let's quickly talk about the graveyard rat. James C. McLaughlin writes, I love this story, but I don't think it ever comes close to being Kuttner's best. I haven't read a whole lot of Kuttner, but I have The Old Del Rey, The Best of Henry Kuttner. There's several excellent stories in that volume that I think exceed Graveyard Rats. He can also be very funny, as you mentioned. The Proud Robot is in his best of and is hilarious. One of the few stories that have ever made me bust out loud while reading. Highly recommended. I gotta check out that stuff.
I'm very interested in that material. Marcus Lauer wrote, I agree, this story, though entertaining, does not come close to Kuttner's best work. In fact, Mimsy Were the Boro Groves, a story he co-wrote with his wife C.L. Moore, is one of my all-time favorite science fiction stories. That's, of course, a reference to the Jabberwocky poem.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It was chosen by the Science Fiction Writers of America for the Hall of Fame anthology. Maybe you'll get around to covering it someday. There are distinct touches of Lovecraft's weird geometry in there.
Mm.
Well, we might not get to it anytime soon, but dear readers, you should definitely check those stories out because I liked Kuttner and you should read more of his good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb Shoggoth Lord Long, remember, who has pet rats, or at least...
Yeah.
An endearing love for rats, wrote, goggling isn't creepy, Chad. Talking about that weird vibrating thing they do with their eyes. Right. Learn to love the precious plague bears. They're full of love and half-digested cheese. That doesn't help. Your pro-rat propaganda is not good. And I'm getting a little tired of this. It's more like Shoggoth bored at this time.
Oh!
Right? Zing!
Well, Caleb also wrote, Cunt Mather was a superstitious twit, but thanks to my high school history class, I know that even he knew vaccination was a sure way to prevent disease. Indeed, he thought the religious folks of his day that shunned vaccines as evil were being blinded by Satan. I guess even some of the biggest idiots still have some modicum of common sense.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, I take it back. It's not Shoggoth bored. Shoggoth scored. Comment. Say, something like that. God damn it. Jeff C. Carter fighting his way onto the show once again.
Jesus, man.
But I have to read this. It's a great comment. When I went to school in witch-haunted Boston, I remember a storm that flooded the subway tunnels. They hooked up huge tubes to pump out all the water. These became dead rat launchers until finally the hoses were clogged by rats too large to pass through.
John Hancock writes, regarding frightful orgies, have you ever seen the film Event Horizon when they recover the video log of the original crew? My favorite orgy story ever, however, involves Adam West and Frank Gorshin. What? Who were allegedly kicked out of an orgy for refusing to break character as Batman and the Riddler? What?
I don't believe it.
John Hancock is usually not the kind of fella to make stuff up, so there must be some truth to this rumor, but man.
Yeah. The only truth I'll accept is that John was also there. And disappointed when Adam West and Frank Gorshin We're kicked out of an orgy.
Were they kicked out because they wouldn't have sex? Is that why they were kicked out?
No, it says they refused to break character as Batman and the Riddler, which means they were cool with them wearing the outfits, or they were cool with them being there, but the minute he was like, they couldn't break character, so it disturbed the other. I don't believe it.
Okay.
Alan Ricks writes, I don't remember if you talked about rat kings before in an earlier episode. Rat kings are a real phenomenon where groups of rats get their tails and fur matted together and form a large moving bunch. In folklore, they are seen as omens of plagues or other bad events. There's also a tradition that they are more intelligent as a group, and people even call them a cryptid creature. And you know what? Somebody just sent me a video of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Rats all in a line, hooked up together, moving around, presumably trying to look like a snake to ward off predators.
Oh, weird.
And I did not like it one bit.
I got half
a watch, and I said, don't need more of that rat business.
Yeah, don't need that. Devin Morse wrote, I want to say I found CNC's half-assed pep talk about not comparing yourself to others or feeling discouraged by a lack of immediate success really encouraging.
Well, good. I got to tell you, I had a week where it made me question that wisdom.
Oh, yeah.
But thank you for the positive feedback. And that's all we have for this time. On the next comment show, we'll be talking Beyond the Door and more. I'm excited to get into that because, Chris, you got schooled a little for saying that the guy in that story got punished too much for what was essentially just a crappy breakup. It's still actually coming in. Somebody just tweeted about it. So we've got some apologizing to do there, but that will have to wait. For now, I am Sir Chad Pfeiffer.
And I am Sir Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast comment show.
Exclusively on Patreon.